Hi everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rohrkraut.
And today we are celebrating the 20th anniversary of really, I think, one of the most iconic films in recent memory, and certainly at the Oscars. We will be talking about Ang Lee's Brokeback Mountain, talking all about what makes this movie so special, its legacy, and of course, unpacking one of the most controversial Oscar losses, really, of all time. And I'm framing it as an Oscar loss because the winner, Crash, has a bit of a reputation, I think, of being one of the worst Best Picture winners of all time for a lot of people. So this will be, I think, a good episode as we talk about the legacy of Brokeback Mountain and then also the Oscars of it all.
Yeah, we're finally here. We've made it to this year at the Oscars, which I think we've put off along with some of our favorite wins. But yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. Brokeback Mountain is also being re-released in theaters now. I know it's at AMC's everywhere, but go and see it in a theater. I think that was what was so special to me, is that I was, not to date myself, like 14 when this came out, maybe. So I wasn't seeing, for the most part, R-rated movies at the time, especially not this, a more artsy, critically acclaimed film. Maybe you were. I think you probably were. But
I was to some extent, but I did not see this in theaters when it came out. And I've definitely told this story on the pod before, but I feel like I need to tell it again now just because it connects to this particular Oscar race. But I was in sixth grade, and that was when I was like really following the Oscars or starting to. I was reading Entertainment Weekly, just like pouring over it. And I remember rooting for Brokeback Mountain to win, even though I hadn't seen it, because I was just reading all about it, and it had won most of the prizes up until then. And I remember being really upset when it lost, and going to school the next day, my teacher, who I won't call out by name, said, "Oh, well, Crash deserved to win." And I remember being so upset and just knowing in my core that she was wrong, even though I was 12. I just knew it was all wrong.
Yeah, so we'll get into that, and I'm excited because I also rewatched Crash, which I never thought I would have to do again. But we're also celebrating Pride, and I'm glad that Brokeback has been released during June for that. So yeah, I highly recommend. I think we're going to sing all of its praises today because it's a lovely movie on so many levels. But yeah, I guess let's just get right into it. Description here: set against the sweeping vistas of Wyoming and Texas, the film tells a story of two young men, a ranch hand and a rodeo cowboy, who meet in the summer of 1963 and unexpectedly forge a lifelong connection, one whose complications, joys, and tragedies provide a testament to the endurance and power of love. This was directed by Ang Lee. It stars Heath Ledger, Jake Gyllenhaal, Michelle Williams, and Anne Hathaway, and more. I love the women that show up two-thirds of the way through this movie, and they just keep coming. So it's kind of fun in terms of like who's been Oscar nominated, who will be.
When Linda Cardellini pops up, when Kate Mara pops up, it's like,
Anna
Faris. My God, this cast is loaded. Yes.
What are they doing in here? But they're so good. And in terms of awards for the movie, so at the Academy Awards, it won three for directing, adapted screenplay, and score. It had five other nominations for picture, cinematography for Rodrigo Prieto, actor for Ledger, supporting actor for Gyllenhaal, and supporting actress for Michelle Williams. At the BAFTAs, it won film, director, adapted screenplay, and supporting actor for Gyllenhaal, and had five other nominations. At the Golden Globes, it won Motion Picture Drama, Director, Screenplay, and Original Song for A Love That Will Never Grow Old, and had three other nominations. At the Spirit Awards, it won Feature and Director, and had two other nominations. At the MTV Movie Awards, it won Performance for Gyllenhaal and Kiss Between Ledger and Gyllenhaal. I feel like that's special and like a landmark win for that ceremony.
I was just going to say, who knew that the MTV Movie Awards would be more progressive than the Oscars? I mean, I suppose it makes sense, but the fact that we've covered so many Best Kiss MTV Movie Award winners is hilarious.
And The Notebook had only won the year before, so I feel like these are great back-to-back wins there. At NBR, it won Director and Supporting Actor for Gyllenhaal. At the New York Film Critics Circle, it won Film Director and Actor for Ledger. At SAG, it had 4 nominations in Cast, Lead and Supporting Actor, and Supporting Actress. And at the Venice Film Festival, it won the Golden Lion for Best Film. I mention all of those because that will come into play later in our conversation. So just remember all of the different kinds of ceremonies that we mentioned, and we'll mention Crash's wins later. But I think let's stick with Brokeback Mountain. If you hadn't seen this when this came out, what is your relationship with it? How many times have you seen it? What was your most recent viewing like?
I watched it for the first time in college when I thought it was finally time to watch it. I just remember thinking it was such a beautiful, stunning achievement. I love Heath Ledger's performance in this so much. I think it is just really one of the all-time great performances by a leading man. And it's just so sensitive and emotionally rich. And I love the world that Ang Lee creates for his actors. I love how prominent nature is and how weather feels in this movie. And I actually hadn't watched it in a very long time. And this watch, I think actually just being older and thinking also just about what's going on in the world right now, I think its themes just felt even more important and potent, and the whole experience was that much richer, I think. And I feel like I got so much more out of it than I did when I watched it in my early 20s. So yeah, I think this movie is pretty perfect, and I'm so glad that it's had such a lasting legacy. What did you think of it? When did you first see it, and how was your rewatch?
This is only my second time too, and I'd seen this a few years ago at this point, not that long ago, but I still felt like this experience in a theater was just undeniably beautiful and remarkable in so many ways. I also really loved the nature, and it almost feels like the slice of life experience. They're on this summer trip and time just seems to fly by. I didn't realize in my first viewing how many years have passed. And that's mostly apparent by the growth and childhood of Ennis's daughter, Alma Jr., later played by Kate Mara, and how she eventually turns 18. But you do see Ennis and Jack age in their face a little bit too. But I think the way that Ang Lee plays with time is really interesting too, and how that impacts or changes their relationship and the love they have for each other. I loved seeing that unfold and being able to see nuances in Jake Gyllenhaal and how he really comes on to Ennis early on, or how they comfort each other. Even just watching them herd sheep, I feel like I could watch that for minutes on end. It's just so serene. I really love the score, so I'm really happy with that win at the Oscars. It's just such a peaceful mood and setting, and then it's overlaid with this heartbreak eventually. But yeah, there are frustrations in the character Ennis Del Mar, but I feel like it's so real for its time of portraying these men who may have different feelings and they can't talk about it with anyone. And they're worried about being murdered by people in their town. And, you know, that was Ennis's trauma. And I feel like that also compounded for me this viewing. So there's a lot to, I think, love about this movie and take away from it. But I think I'm just most happy that it's not this overly sensationalist movie, even though you do leave feeling pretty downtrodden by that final shot.
Yeah. I think the difference really is that, like you said, it's not sensationalized. There is suffering, but it feels honest and true to the characters and not like it's exploiting its themes. Like, I feel like everything that happens to these characters is grounded in the story, and just it feels like something that would befall these men. And I like how different the two characters are too. I think that was something I really enjoyed this time, of just, you know, you have the Heath Ledger character and Estelle Marr, who, like you said, carries this memory from his childhood of what could happen if he gets caught with another man. And then you have Jack Twist, the Jake Gyllenhaal character, who wants to be more open, who wants to live a life with him and not in fear. And I think they're different perspectives and how those play off of each other. Yeah, it makes the heartbreak feel that much harder, I think. And at the beginning, you know, when they're together, we meet them on Brokeback Mountain on this job. We see them have sex in the tent before we know anything really about their lives at home. We don't meet Laureen Newsome. I know that happens later, but we don't meet Alma or anyone else before then. So I think that's so important, because the beginning of the film establishes their relationship for us before we know any other details about them. And so for us, we, I think, feel the importance of their emotional relationship too that much more. But I think what's so important about this, of what Ang Lee does too, is that this is where he does two things. He establishes the men and their connection to nature. We see the weather changing frequently. We see it snow. We see thunderstorms. We have this beautiful blue sky and these sweeping vistas that make it feel like a classic Western in many ways. But he's playing with the weather in a way that I think only he could really do, which is to either show what's going on inside for these men or to have it openly contradict what's happening inside. And that, I think, is such a cool thing thematically to play with. And he also plays, I think, with their physicality too. And when they get into that scuffle and Ennis has that bloody shirt and realizes he leaves it behind, that comes back later, I think, in such a devastating way. So he's just a really smart storyteller, I think, visually too, in how he constructs an image and plays with theme all around.
Yeah, I think the weather that I like the most, we get thunderstorms at times. I love the hail scene where it just comes out of nowhere and they have to huddle in that tent together. And in terms of seeing them together first, ready to go to Brokeback, it's silent for quite some time. And that's part of Ennis's character of being quiet and warming up to him. So I think that's another characteristic that's important, that we see that he becomes comfortable with him. And then after this, realizing that they won't see each other for months, years, we really don't know. Because they've been together at this point all of the film. And then Ennis is talking about marrying Alma. And then we finally see Michelle Williams. Everyone is just so young in this movie. It's, as I see this over time, will make me feel just so old, I think.
Yeah.
But it seems like a very traditional relationship where they're going to get married, they have kids, and they really just try to make ends meet. Alma wants to move to the city so that their kids can have friends and they can just have better access to things in their community. But Ennis is a cowboy. I think he's used to that quietude and not having anybody. And I think that Jack coming on to him is really important, because that allows him to understand that maybe deep down he doesn't know what this feeling is, but he's never been able to express that. And there's absolutely nobody around except for that really creepy moment when their boss is kind of spying on them with the binoculars, like he has come to give them a message. and sees them fooling around a bit, running around, playing as cowboys, he starts to feel safer with him. And that's, I think, what is so special about this movie, is seeing them not only act uninhibited, but just be able to be vulnerable with each other. And especially with Ennis, because he's so closed up, he has some sort of wall around him. And once he explains where that traumatic memory came from and how it comes back again in his imagination, not only does Jack fall in love with him more, but we start to understand like why he is this way. And you're right of what you said earlier, is they feel like human beings. And not to compare it to Crash, where they don't, but it's just, these are real people. And that helps you see the time for what it was. And I think that's why it's so easy to watch. This isn't a movie that I don't want to ever watch again, because it's so hard to watch. It is so easy to fall into. And I think that feeling that it gives you, that I think really Ang Lee is amazing at, is just that comfort and how gentle they are with one another. He is giving that to the audience as well.
Yeah, I think that's so true. It's just such a sensitive, gentle movie, especially when you're watching their relationship unfold. And what I think makes the passage of time in this movie so gutting is that throughout the film, we see Ennis and Jack make choices to survive. That's really what they are, right? Like, Ennis marries Alma, he has two daughters, and when he meets Jack again, he decides that he needs to make this choice to stay with his family. Then he's alone. We have a great scene. One of the best scenes in the movie is him with Alma at that Thanksgiving dinner after they're divorced and she's remarried, and she calls him Jack Nasty. I think that's just one of the most iconic lines in the movie, but also it's just a great, painful scene where she basically says, like, I know what happened, and it's not handled on her end really with much empathy. She has a lot of pain, and then they have this really, I think, pretty devastating fight, physical fight in the kitchen. But then also, Jack has made a choice too. He has married Loreen, a very young Anne Hathaway. And he's gone to Texas and has a completely different life with her. And he also has a really complicated relationship with her father. It's interesting, I think, to see just how these men handle conflict. But also, I think as time has passed, years and years passed, they still are meeting up intermittently, not very frequently, but they're going on these fishing trips together where they're not doing any fishing at all, as Alma points out. We start to feel the gravity of those choices more and more with the passage of time. And you just start to feel like life is so short, and they have this great love, but everything around them, including their own experiences, have really prevented them from being together. And that, I think, is some of the beauty of the screenplay, but also, again, Ang Lee's direction of just really, I think, doing such a good job of making you feel that more intensely as the film goes on.
Jack Twist, Jack Nasty. Truly just one of the best lines. And that is such a great Oscar scene for Michelle Williams. Because she is so good at pain. And the way that the conversation starts, you don't know that this is going to happen, that she's going to confront him after all this time. And you see her at the kitchen table in the apartment when Ennis just runs in and out because Jack's here now and he's happy and basically prancing around, can't wait to leave. And she's stuck with the kids and she's like, you forgot something. And I always think it's going to be like kissing her goodbye, but it was his fishing net and tackle box on the table. And the way she just so calmly, like she's not even shaking, but she says, you know, how she put that note on the end of the line is just really takes you aback. I forgot about that part this time and just how she breaks down and they end up screaming. That relationship is, yeah, just so toxic. I want to mention some technical elements now. So the cinematographer, Rodrigo Prieto, a legend. We've talked about him before with Killers of the Flower Moon, and he worked on Barbie and with Scorsese on other pictures. He's amazing. And the editors were Geraldine Peroni and Dylan Tekinor. I think the way those elements are incorporated in the movie just help to really make you see in one way, like these couples juxtaposed versus one another, how Lorraine and Jack have all this money because of her dad and the business that they have selling farm equipment versus Ennis and Alma. And then also Alma after she remarries and how her life betters, you know, even with the turkey carver, I noticed this time. Mm-hmm. But those two scenes also of screaming during this holiday, because we have that, like you just mentioned, and then we have Jack standing up to his father-in-law who tries to demean him and he just blows up. And it's so fun to see Lorraine Anne Hathaway just smirk mm-hmm. and be like, yay, you go, girl. Like, and it's so funny because she's the one going up to him all the time. Like when they first met, it's Lorraine in that really bright red. I love mm-hmm. the costumes in this movie. So apart from the acting, which is a big part of this movie, it's all of these other components. There are certain shots. There's one shot in particular that I absolutely loved. It's after they have gone to Brokeback for many years at this point. And it's also like, how often are they going? At first, mm-hmm. it's a 4-year difference before they even talk to each other again. And then they start to talk about they go multiple times a year. And then it's potentially once a month that they see each other. So they start to have this real relationship. Yet Ennis won't go away with him, start a ranch, and be together. There's just so much fear in that. But I think Ang Lee, and again, with the editing, we get to see some of that through the wives at that point too. So later on, once Lorraine finally talks to Ennis, we can even see that she knows what this has been for Jack. And she processes it a lot differently. And I don't know if that's because of class or just the way she copes, because in a similar way that Ennis's marriage was toxic, Jack later says, we could do our marriage over the phone. So neither of them are very close, have a really tight-knit bond. There's some great comedy in this movie, I will say.
Oh, yeah.
Just funny one-liners. Some of it is just aging poorly, but my favorite, I think, is when Alma and Ennis get married and the priest goes, you may kiss the bride, and if you don't, I will. Ha ha ha. It's like, that is the creepiest thing. But yeah, it shows love in so many different ways. And I think that's mm-hmm. such a beautiful component to the story.
I think so too. And you talking about the cinematography, Prieto's work here, this is one of my favorite movies really that he's ever done. Mm-hmm. I think when I'm thinking about individual shots from the movie, there are a few. There's one on the 4th of July when Ennis is with Alma and his daughters at the fireworks and those disgusting mm-hmm. men are talking about women in just such a gross, crass way. And he fights them. Yeah. And we have this shot of him just standing up in the firework in the distance. And he looks like a classic cowboy. Mm-hmm. And it's such a beautiful, beautiful shot. The other is when they're on Brokeback and Jack has just lassoed Ennis.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just such a beautiful, sweet scene. But one of the shots there, it just looks like a painting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just such a great visual metaphor using the Western to show them falling in love. And then also, of course, the ending when we see the part of the shirt in the closet next to the postcard. Ugh, it makes me start sobbing.
Yeah.
It's just awful.
It really rips your heart in two, especially mm-hmm. when you see that the whole plot line of he left his shirt, but it was actually that, you know, he took the shirt. And once Ennis goes to Jack's childhood room, and I think the way they handle the parents with Ennis and the mom and dad and how they treat him differently, I think that is just so telling. But he's in the room and he finds the shirt behind, kind of like secretly hidden away.
Yeah.
And the way he flips it in the end, and he looks at the postcard and kind of talks to Jack in his little trailer and looks out the window, and how he's confined, we're confined to this internal space, looking outward at the horizon of possibility and hope. And yeah, it's just, it's an ending you don't want to get up afterwards. And it's just such a journey. Like, they get divorced in 1975, so that's been 12 years, but it's maybe been around 20 years after we meet them. So that amount of time is, yeah, it is devastating. It's really hard to think about.
I feel like there was just like a lump in my throat for the last 20, 30 minutes of the movie, because you know what's coming, but it really does wallop you slowly, I will say.
Yeah.
And like some of the best lines, I think of that, you know, the really iconic scene of the final meeting we have with the two of them together. And that's where we get the, I wish I knew how to quit you from Jack.
Yeah.
And that one's just like, that kills me. And then also when he says, tell you what, the truth is sometimes I miss you so much I can hardly stand it.
Yeah.
And of course, the final line of the movie too, of Ennis saying, Jack, I swear.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's hardest when you see Ennis crying or breaking down quietly, because again, he doesn't show a whole lot in the whole movie. So when you see him happy, you are elated with him. And when he's crying, you know it's really serious. My other favorite shot in the movie is when we get this tracking shot and it's Ennis behind Jack. And I think it's at that moment when they're about to leave Brokeback and Jack is like, I want to see you more. I mean, he does this multiple times, but we track left and right to see Ennis on different sides of Jack. And I'm like, that is such an interesting shot, because it was deliberate. And you kind of, in that moment, imagine these different lives that they could have had together and the struggle that Ennis has internally with allowing that to happen. Because all you want for these guys is just to be happy and free and alone, as they are in the forest on this mountain for eternity. And then, yeah, with him wanting the ashes scattered there on Brokeback, that's the nail in the coffin, so to speak, of Lorraine hearing that and the parents dealing with that, having met Ennis. And yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is important in terms of our conversation we'll have shortly, but you leave the theater pretty miserable in a glorious way.
Yeah, this is one of those movies too, because I think you're rooting for them to be together so desperately, but you know it can't happen. And the ending just hits with such a punch that it's one of those where you cannot get up. There are a few of those where you just feel like you have to sit through the credits. This is definitely one of those. And it has, it just has such an impactful ending.
Yeah. Well, I think talking about the Oscars now, do you think anything was snubbed in terms of nominations and or wins besides Best Picture?
Yeah, we can save Best Picture for later. I think that's fine. I mean, in terms of wins, like, I'm very happy Ang Lee won director. That's one of my favorite directing wins. I think it's just a masterpiece. And when we think about Ang Lee too, he talks about how he had just made The Hulk. And he was kind of at the end of his creative rope. He was just not inspired. He didn't want to make movies anymore. And he talks about how when he made this movie, it just totally reinvigorated him. He said, I think that the movie gods were shining down upon him. But yeah, I love that. I'm very happy that Philip Seymour Hoffman has an Oscar, but I would have voted for Heath Ledger here. Like I said earlier, what he does in this role is just pretty remarkable. When we think about sensitivity in performance, withholding emotion, but also just making us understand Ennis as a character completely. And on that point too, I would give both of our supporting nominees here wins as well, like Michelle Williams and Jake Gyllenhaal. I mean, bless the BAFTAs for giving Jake a win, but mm-hmm. I think he's so good as Jack Twist. He's such a good foil for Ennis. I think they're so different as characters. And George Clooney and Syriana, not my favorite. I love George Clooney, but I would have gone with Jake Gyllenhaal here. Yeah, how do you feel about the actors? Because it's kind of crazy when you look at this film and how well it did this season that none of the actors won. But then that's also, I think, part of the reason that Crash did win Best Picture. So it definitely makes things complicated, but mm-hmm. I'm curious what you think of the performances here, I think relative to who else is nominated.
It's tough. I love all of them. I think even, you know, there's a place for Anne Hathaway to be nominated, but it is a year of really strong nominees. You mentioned Philip Seymour Hoffman winning for Capote. We have Joaquin Phoenix up that year for Walk the Line, but we have Judi Dench nominated also. And then Rachel Weisz, Amy Adams, Catherine Keener, Frances McDormand also nominated and supporting with Michelle. So it's these huge names. So I don't necessarily see wins for them. This was even Paul Giamatti's only nomination for a while with Cinderella mm-hmm. Man. A movie for a nomination that I completely forget about. But I love Jake here. I think, you know, with his wiles and how he opens up too, and we see him go crazy at one point, apart from them fighting with one another, it's the chemistry is really important, and that plays into their nominations, I would say, and wanting to root for them. I think it's understandable that nobody won, but I agree with Heath Ledger being so deserving of a win. And I think with a lot of the prizes that I mentioned, or the regional prizes that I didn't mention, it's just that they were winning there. And these are critically acclaimed roles that, you know, Ledger did win for at the New York Film Critics Circle, and Jake won. And, you know, it's maybe less of an industry win for them, but deserving nonetheless.
Well, and I think a huge part of it, too, is that one of the frustrations that Ang Lee talked about and that Diana Ossana talked about, who she wrote the screenplay alongside the legendary Larry McMurtry, of course, but they both talked about how difficult it was because they would take the movie to different studios and people would say, this is great. You know, this is a remarkable screenplay, but no one wanted to make the movie. No one wanted to back it. They were all scared to back it. And same thing with the actors. There were a lot of people who were considered for Ennis and Jack before Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal that wouldn't touch it, or their agents advised them not to do it. But then Ang Lee said that with Heath and Jake, they had no problem with it. They signed on right away after reading the script. Wow. So that's another, I think, interesting wrinkle to it too, is just how on paper this was clearly, you know, bound to be a beautifully made movie based on the director attached, based on the screenplay, but people didn't want to do it.
All for their careers and how it could destroy them in a way. I mean, this was how Hollywood was for a long time, which is so upsetting, but it also makes me happy that we got the actors that we did that were so young in their careers, most of them, and we have these performances. I mean, one of only a few for Heath, but outstanding ones at that. And I think reasons why their careers just totally blew up after this.
I think so too. And then getting into some technical categories too. I mean, I would have voted for this for cinematography. I think for all of the reasons that we talked about, I love the score win. This score has the effect on me that the If Beale Street Could Talk score does, which is when it's like a sensory overload and instant response where if I hear it, I cry. Like any part of it. It just, if it comes on, tears. Mm-hmm. So it's just such a beautiful, beautiful piece of music. And you talked about the original song, A Love That Will Never Grow Old. I'm kind of surprised that didn't get a nomination, considering the strength of the movie.
Mm-hmm. It must have been some sort of weird 3 nominee rule. They didn't have enough maybe for a full set of 5 nominees, because that's what happened. I would have nominated this in editing. Also in costume design, I think the costumes, also looking back at them releasing like behind the scene footage recently of picking outfits for them, the beige jacket, Jake's entirely denim outfit, it's just you at one point see 2 cowboys riding on horses in not those things. And I'm like, wait, who's who? Why do they have new jackets on? Like, it is so embedded in their character, those colors and their outfits, that is just an important mark of great costume work. So I definitely would have nominated Merritt Allen and Jericho Kikuchi for that. And then how do you think today's Academy would receive this movie?
So I think today's Academy, this is tricky because I want to say they'd be more open to it, but I actually think they'd respond pretty similarly. And the reason why I say this is because we do have some evidence that they would. It's not exactly the same, but it was called the Gay Cowboy Movie in the same way, and that's The Power of the Dog. And we saw how all season people were so just desperate to find any other movie that could beat it for Best Picture.
Yeah.
And you had, you know, like Sam Elliott speaking out about it in the same way that Ernest Borgnine said he wouldn't see it and that John Wayne would roll over in his grave if he were alive. So it's like, Jesus. Come on. It's just so annoying, but truthfully. But I kind of think they'd respond really similarly. I think that this would get labeled as the cold or difficult movie. It makes you sad. It makes you think. And it's just, its emotions aren't as in your face and obvious as what the Academy tends to go for sometimes. So I don't know. And I also feel like I read this in an interview with Ang Lee that he said he thinks they would still have trouble making it today, getting it greenlit. So wow. I don't know. My inclination is to say it would perform pretty similarly.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to wait to answer this until after we talked about Crash, because I think surprisingly for my answer is the same for both movies, is that I think they'd respond similarly because of the time we're in now. It just completely reflects 2005, kind of disgustingly so, in that the needle hasn't really moved that far. You know, having great performances and the film is beautiful technically, but I totally understand in a way that you leave each movie feeling differently. And I could see that being a reason why people would want to vote for it or not, or just the rampant homophobia, transphobia, anti-LGBTQ plus laws and bans that are happening every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, we are living in a world where this, even though it's progressive, and like I said, this movie today couldn't be made, but there is a version of it in there where there are still struggles and hurdles that people go through, traumas that they hold near and dear that scare them from going outside or, you know, being themselves. So it's unfortunate because it is so deserving. I think I would give this Best Picture. I would absolutely vote for it for Best Picture in a ranked ballot and just the ballot of 5 back then. Like, this is number 1.
Yeah. And if we're looking at the picture nominees, what's crazy here is, like, I really like Munich. And I think Good Night and Good Luck is really good, too. Capote, I haven't seen in a very long time. But it's Crash is the worst of the bunch, too. So it's like, even if you're doing a ranked ballot, Crash is at the very bottom for me. But if you could give this movie 1 Oscar, would it be Best Picture? Is that what you're saying? We asked this on Instagram, by the way, and the response was overwhelmingly Best Picture. And mm-hmm. I totally understand that because I think that's what it's right known for unfairly or unjustly losing, right? But then we also had some other responses too, some actor, supporting actor, directing. But Best Picture, I think, was the overwhelming favorite from listeners.
I mean, this is a, what, once a year allowance for Best Picture.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying no, but I think the win for Ang Lee is just undeniably special and important. This was the first year an Asian person had won in director, which, again, it's 2005. 2006 was the ceremony. But his craft and his work, the story that you told about him being reinvigorated, it's funny thinking, because I thought this during the movie, about Life of Pi, which comes after, and that is just such a different film, but vibrant and loaded with visual effects. And this is all real. It's so physical and natural, and it's about human connection and emotion and love. And I think what he does is just spectacular. So it's not no for picture,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know. What's your answer? Would you give it picture?
Yeah, like it would be picture, I think, just because it just feels so wrong that it didn't win. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be one of my all-time favorite Best Picture winners. But to pick a second place, I like your Ang Lee answer, but just to do something differently, I would go Heath Ledger, Best Actor. I really came away from this viewing admiring that performance and everything that he did. I think I also just miss him.
Yeah.
It just made me realize, like, all of the cool roles he could have now if he were still with us. I was just thinking of all these, you know, different projects I would like to see him in and directors he could work with. And so it just made the watch, I think, more painful. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I was watching the movie, and because we covered James Dean on a recent episode, it's like he is our James Dean, who is just so incredible in his face and how he either stifles emotion or portrays that. And there were just so many parallels between them. And yeah, we lost them both so early.
Yeah. I'll never forget. I was at swim practice in high school, January.
Oh my God.
Got out of the pool.
Oh.
One of my friends and I just were completely wrecked.
Oh my God.
Anyway.
Well, talk about being wrecked in a different way. Let's move on to Crash, the way that people in LA apparently have to feel because we're stuck behind metal and glass all the time and they have to crash into one another to feel anything. How did Crash win? That is the big question.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about what Brokeback Mountain brought to the table. I'll just go through some awards quickly for Crash. So at the Oscars, it won 3 for picture, original screenplay, and editing. It had 3 other nominations for director for Paul Haggis, supporting actor for Matt Dillon, and original song for In the Deep.
Oh, In the Deep. That just sounds like such a classic original song nominee. I'm shocked Diane Warren didn't write it.
Right? She wishes. Yeah, she was kicking herself for that one. It also won at the American Cinema Editors, BAFTA for Original Screenplay and Supporting Actress for Tandy Newton. It won SAG Ensemble, so that was the big one among all of the big precursors, also with nominations for Dylan and Don Cheadle. It was also nominated at DGA, PGA, the Art Directors Guild, the Cinema Audio Society, the Motion Picture Sound Editors, at the Golden Globes for Screenplay and Supporting Actor for Dylan. It won the WGA for Original Screenplay, and it won First Feature and Supporting Actor for Dylan again at the Spirit Awards, and it won Breakthrough Actor for Terrence Howard at NBR. So again, big precursors. It won BAFTA Original Screenplay, SAG Ensemble, and that's it. And then
mm-hmm.
among some of the guilds, and Brokeback had the Golden Globe for Drama, PGA, DGA, and BAFTA. So how does Crash win over the amount of awards that it had and the momentum it had going for it?
It's interesting because I'm curious what you think of this too, but one thing as I was reading about it and just kind of putting myself back in that time that I fixated on was that Roger Ebert gave it 4 stars and said at the time that the right movie won Best Picture. So there were people around who did like it. I think now, you know, time has passed. It has this reputation of being a bad winner, which I still think it is. But at the time, I think people were warmer to it. Not totally. I think if you watch Jack Nicholson read that card, one of the most iconic Best Picture deliveries, announcements ever, the way he says, "Crash," and then you see him mouth off camera, "Whoa." It's so good.
Oh my God.
And like, even he was just like, "How did this happen?
Wow.
What's going on?" But anyway, I was thinking a lot about how, with the comparison I made to The Power of the Dog, I think what happened that year that reminded me a lot of the Brokeback year is that I think when a movie wins a lot and you have time with it winning a lot of awards, people start to be contrarian. People want another option if they're not a big fan of that one. They look and they search for something else. And I think that Crash for them was that easy option. It also, I think, is important that it comes out just a few years after 9/11. Mm-hmm. So it's like this, you know, very like highly charged time. I think that Brokeback, it was reduced, like I said at the time, to the gay cowboy movie. People, of course, like homophobia, I think, is a big, big part of its loss. But also, I think Hollywood was able to separate itself from it. And Crash is an LA story with some of their favorite actors getting into the most heavy-handed emotional situations possible.
Yeah.
Sandra Bullock falling down the stairs. The absolutely ridiculous, ludicrous scene of Michael Peña and his daughter jumping in front of him to hug him as this man is going to shoot him. I think the message of that movie ultimately is, we're all racist. That's what the movie is saying, and it's kind of absolving Hollywood of its guilt and racism.
Mm-hmm.
I think that can be a very powerful thing, especially when your favorite actors are attached. It's funny how at this in The Blind Side, like, Sandra Bullock is always at the scene of the crime. What's she doing? I love that woman, but what is she doing?
What they're all doing, it's, you know, it's her screaming about a gangbanger or a gang member while there are cops in her house, while the man that she's talking about is still in her house fixing her locks. Oh my God. You go through every character. We don't have enough time to do that. Ludacris, who is absolutely ludicrous in his visions and how he sees a bus, and why do they put big windows on the bus? It's to show you off like a zoo animal and show that you're poor. Like, the ways that these people function are just not real. Like, the movie works on a level. You can decide what that is, but like, when Terrence Howard, his character, he's being jumped and they're trying to steal his van, and then the cops stop them and he comes out of the car, he makes no mention of, someone was trying to break into my car and he is currently in the passenger seat. Like, the ways that they protect each other, or, you know, go through situations about Tandy Newton's character being molested by a cop who later is a white savior who saves her from her burning car. Like,
that whole crash, the whole, like, the car crash scene, that crash. Oh my God.
Like, the emotional buildup, it works to some extent. I have to say, like, I love how the puzzle pieces fit together. And I get that it's just this condensed metaphor for a world of people who live different lives and we're different than what you see on our faces, you know, and what we have at home. The fact that Matt Dillon was the only nominated person in this movie, and he's like one of the most deplorable, but it's okay because he's taking care of his dad who is medically compromised. And multiple ways, but you're meant to leave this movie feeling much happier and much more hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally the opposite of Brokeback. But I mean, the reasons for that, yes, are it's because, okay, racism is rampant and that's just what it is. And let's be a better society. I love that in Scott Tobias's article for The Guardian, his anniversary article, which just came out, he ends the article saying, "Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown."
Oh my God.
And that's just a perfect way to sum up this movie and of this time that we're living in, where, you know, when they're at the gun store and he's selling the gun to the Persian people who he calls mm-hmm. Saddam, and it's just xenophobia. The things that they say in the beginning of this movie are so derogatory and offensive to every kind of person you could think of, every minority.
Mm-hmm. It's like a Carla Sofia Gascon tweet rampage. No stone left unturned.
But it is, and it's like, how did this get made and how did everyone sign on to this? Especially for a first feature. I didn't realize that for Haggis, but I don't know. It's laughable to an extent that it's like almost camp at this point. But it's also, again, relatable, and the world has become so divisive that these things are happening every day. They haven't stopped, but it's just worse than you could imagine.
Yeah. And I think we're at the point in time where we could see another crash Brokeback Mountain situation at the Oscars very soon.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it feels, you know, with the time we're living in, right around the corner. I don't want to conjure that up, but I also love that Scott Tobias line, because that's also a little, I don't know if he intended to do this, but it's also a very funny little ode to Jack Nicholson and how stunned he was at the Oscars.
Well, if there's any chance for PTA to win a Best Picture or any kind of Oscar for a political movie, I'm sure you wouldn't hate that, but it's probably going
to be very
different.
I wouldn't, but don't compare
than,
it yeah, to Crash.
Exactly. It's not going to be the same as this.
Oh my gosh. Well, that was our anniversary episode on Brokeback Mountain and a little chat about the notorious 2005 Best Picture race. An Oscar ceremony. I think we can both recommend Brokeback Mountain. It's going to be in theaters this week. If you haven't seen it, go see it. See it again. It's just one of the most beautiful movies I think ever made. So we highly recommend it and both also agree that it should be our Best Picture winner.
Yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I had fun this episode. We'll be off next week for the 4th, but I hope everyone has a good holiday. Go see Brokeback Mountain in theaters, and we will be back very soon with some new episodes. Feel free to find us on Blue Sky, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at OscarWildPod, and bonus content on our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWild.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.